श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री गिरिराज महाराज की जय, श्री जगन्नाथ बालदेव सुभद्रा की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमाण। Good morning to all of you. Welcome. Thanks so much for coming, your presence here, to all the ones also connected online. And as we said yesterday, today we have our last meeting here in Sofia regarding Brahma Stuti. We have one more remaining in the evening for Istagosti later. So today we will be going through verse number 20, reaching the half of the whole prayers of Brahma, which are 40 verses. So still some way to go. Let's see where it all ends, where, when, how. So yesterday we spoke about how Brahma praised Krishna as the root of all guna avatars, and today that will be in connection to lila avatars. But let's make some more specific recap summary of what we saw yesterday. Verse number 19. Yeah, 19. So I'll read it for you for a minute, and then some brief words. You are the Supreme Self. To those unaware of your actual position, you yourself expand your Maya and appear within inert matter as me, Brahma, for the creation of the universe, as yourself, Vishnu, for its maintenance, and as three-eyed Shiva to bring about its end. So that was yesterday's verse. And basically Krishna, Brahma here is referring to, use the word ajananta, which means those who do not have knowledge, or who do not know basically who you actually are, and he himself counts himself among that group at least some few minutes ago. And now he's transitioning to those who are realizing who Krishna actually is, in every sense of the term. Again, he knew Krishna from the beginning of creation, but at the same time, he didn't know Krishna in its full extent. No? One thing is knowing a person, another thing is knowing the person, if you will. I can say, yeah, I know Ram Mohan. I met him once, I know who he is, I know his name, some. I know that the person exists, and we have some interaction, but another thing is to really get to the ultimate depths of that particular person, their personality, psychology, love. What to speak if that person is the supreme, which is pretty. And you cannot never tell, I fully know Krishna. And that's what Brahma will say, interestingly, at the very end of the Brahma Stuti. I'm going a little bit ahead now. I think it's the very last verse, if I'm not mistaken, of the 40 prayers. He says, to those who say, I know Krishna. No, thank you. I offer my pranam from some respectful distance. Like realizing it's not possible to. I thought I knew Krishna, he's implying. I met him in the beginning of creation. I was the first one to meet him, apparently. I had some exclusivity. I was alone and Krishna came and after me, everyone else came in the universe, but I was the first one to meet him. So I thought I knew him, but I'm realizing I can only touch one point of the infinite line of his personality. So anyhow, he is referring in the previous verse to those who think they know, but actually do not know. Actually, those are the ones who do not know. If you do not know, but you are open to know, if you are humble enough to know, I do not know, then you know. No? Like Socrates will say, only thing I know is that I don't know. Okay, you know pretty much. And the fact that you have that stance opens you to know pretty much more. No? But if you say, I know Krishna, and you close yourself to that particular idea you have about who Krishna is, then you don't know practically anything. So he's referring to them, different possibilities according to the commentators, referring to those who do not have knowledge of Krishna, misunderstand him as an ordinary person to those who follow radical non-dualism of Shankaracharya and thinks Krishna's form is actually temporary, illusory, only Brahman is real. All those varieties of people fall into this category. So in this verse, Brahma is saying, those who do not know you cannot recognize how you yourself are the one behind these functions of creation, maintenance, and dissolution. They cannot grasp how you are the active principle who allowed Brahma, Vishnu, well, Vishnu is Krishna himself, in one other form, Shiva, to do what they do. So, and he emphasizes with this the Abheda side of the equation. Ved, Abed. Ved means difference, Abed means non-difference. So that's the composition of reality, according to us, Gaudiyas. So Abed means non-difference. Everything is Krishna. Krishna is the source of everything. He's behind everything. You cannot separate him from any atom. He's present in every part. Sirodakasai Vishnu, for example, is one form of Krishna who resides not only in every heart, but it's also said in every atom. So that's interesting. It's not necessarily that there's one jiva in every atom, but there's one embassy of Vishnu in every atom. That's the realization of highly evolved souls. There is an embassy of the Supreme in every atom. That's why Srila Siddharmaraj will say sometimes materialistic people doubt the existence of consciousness, and we doubt the existence of matter, he'll say, because we see consciousness in every atom everywhere. So is there actually matter? The more you got deeper, the more consciousness becomes more and more prominent to the forefront, foreground, and the more the notion of inner matter, the perception of matter, resides back and disappears at one point totally. That's the very idea, no? And even other ideas, like Rupa Goswami said, Moksha Laguta Krit, he will say, at the stage of Bhava, the attainment of Mukti is seen as insignificant. In Sadhana Bhakti, we know Mukti is inferior. In Bhava Bhakti, you will realize it's insignificant. And in Prema Bhakti, it no longer exists. It disappeared totally from your side, Mukti. So what to speak about Bhukti, about material gross enjoyment, totally out of sight. Like when you are on a plane and the plane is about to... I have that experience pretty often. The plane, you are still on the plane has not, how do you say?
Taken off.
So you see the world, this world on certain size, and this and that. But when the plane is already in the sky, you look on the window and you see everything so small. But when it goes even higher above the clouds, you no longer see anything. You are in another dimension altogether. Now there are only clouds. They're more. I lose sight of everything else. So the same way, no. The higher you go, the more you will perceive another reality. Basically, I mean reality, not another that actual reality. So anyhow, Brahma then implies whatever. If someone sees Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva as independent performers, if you will, without establishing their roots to you, that confirms Maya Shakti is having her effect on a person. That's the effect of Maya Shakti, we said yesterday. What does it mean to be in Maya? Basically, you perceive reality without connecting it with Krishna. You do not perceive this embassy of Bhagavan here and there. You don't understand Janmadiyasya Jataha. He's the one behind creation, maintenance, dissolution. He's the cause of all causes. And of course, by saying this, by pointing at those who do not know Krishna and how do they perceive reality, Brahma is indirectly praising Bhakti. Because Bhakti is the path, and he uses the word Tvat Padavim, your path, which takes you to you, which makes you known, through which you are known, Bhakti. So you are not known by some people, and those people are the ones who do not take to Bhakti. But if someone takes to Bhakti, you become easily accessible. And Brahma is saying, I am having that experience at present. I'm getting to know you on a level that I couldn't even think that it was possible to know you. Because again, he knew Krishna. He knew he was God at the beginning of creation. It was his father, mother, guru. Krishna instructed him, gave Bhagavatam, Chatur Shloki, Gayatri, so many things he received. And he thought he knew Krishna, and he knew Krishna on some level. But now he's glimpsing at so much more you can be known, so much more. And actually he expressed in the beginning, I want to be your friend. But even he didn't have the full idea of what does it mean. He was somehow attracted by that because how Krishna behaved with him. So Brahma received some sakya, some scars, some impressions from friendly possibility with Krishna. So he was like, oh, this feels nice. Oh, you're taking my hand. We can be friends. I would like that. But he didn't saw the bigger picture of what sakya means. As we know, when he had that picture, he was overwhelmed. He didn't thought this can reach such heights, such depths. But of course, he's attracted to that. Now he's just trying to make sense of everything he has been through in his journey, his trajectory, making sense of that. Something also that our acharyas mention is that in this verse, Vishnu's name is not mentioned separately. Brahma is mentioned separately. Shiva is mentioned separately. But Vishnu, not to make the connection, Vishnu and Krishna are unknown difference in tattva. But then Jiva Goswami explains how Vishnu and Krishna are not different, but are different in bhava, in emotional disposition. You cannot have a picnic with Vishnu, just to begin with. And in that sense, of course, as Brahma already established, Vishnu is an anga of Krishna, is a portion of Swayam Bhagavan, which is a very revolutionary idea. God is an aspect of Krishna. Wow. Just to glimpse at God's existence is a big, big thing. But here, Gaudiyas are saying, actually, that is an aspect of the real person, the ultimate real person. So anyhow, some words regarding yesterday's verse, in which Brahma referred to the guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, connected to the three gunas, Rajas, Sattva, and Tamas, respectively. And how Krishna is the root behind them all, behind all their functions. And today, he will continue in that same line, but shift him a little bit towards the direction of Lila avatars. So there are many avatars. Avatar means descent, or divine descent, from up to down, means it technically, etymologically, avatar. Like appearing in this world, but not being touched by it. So there are different types of avatars. Rupa Goswami describes them in very much detail in his Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Yuga avatar, Mambantar avatar, Leela avatar, Shakti Abhisa avatar, Guna avatar, Purusha avatar, and so on. And many sub-divisions of each one of these categories. So today is the turn of the Leela avatars. So in previous verses, like 10 verses ago or more before, Brahma explained how Krishna is the root of the three Purusha avatars also. Mahavishnu, Garudakshai Vishnu, Kshirudakshai Vishnu. Now he established he's the root cause of the Guna avatars. Now is the turn of the Leela avatars. And on top of that already he said Krishna is the source of God. So of course if Krishna is the source of Narayan, it goes without saying that he will be the source of all the other expansions that come from Narayan, like all these different avatars and so on. But just in case he's further clarifying, all these different verses are like the consequence or the implications of this very bold, powerful Gaudiya statement. Krishna is two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the fountainhead of all faces of divinity. So Brahma is still explaining what it means to us. He's explaining to us what this means and explaining to himself what this means. Because again, a few minutes ago, he didn't have that realization. Now he's realizing Krishna in Vrindavan is the source of everything else, including Narayan, Vishnus, different Vishnus, avatars here. And all of that comes from this little boy who has a morsel of food in his hand still and looking for his friends. You know? So he's trying to, to accommodate that, to give the foundation, the siddhantic foundation, so we can proceed with proper, with the type of love that characterizes Vrindavan. That's what it's establishing in the Gita, in many places. And aham sarvasya prabhavo matha sarvam pravartate. First two lines, Krishna says, I'm the source of everything, and everything comes from me. And again, everything, as we say yesterday, means everything. Everyone, including Narayan. He's the source of everything. And the second two lines say, iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samambita. Or raga bhava samambita, in the words of Siddhasimha. Those who understand that, they will worship me with full passion. And those, of course, who worship him with full passion are the Vrajavasis. So if you want to end up doing that worship, first you have to understand these facts. Krishna is the source of everything. As much as you have that clear, the more your practice will be fueled and informed as to follow the footsteps of the Vrajavasis, which is what we call Raga Nuga Bhakti. So one thing is connected to the other. First two lines, what you need to take, have in place on terms of Sambandha. Second two lines, what's the natural result of that in terms of Abhideya, how that will affect your practice. You will be able to worship me with your full being. So we need to know the things. Sri Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says something similar in Chaitanya Charitamrita, another famous verse. Siddhanta valiya chitna akara alas iha haite Krishna lage sudrida manas. Again, first line. Siddhanta valiya chitna akara alas. He said, please, Mahaprabhu, please. Siddhanta valiya chitna. Try to contemplate Siddhanta. Try to think about all the truths, all the things. Try to use your head, your heart, everything. Not only Mahaprabhu, of course. And he said, try to think, try to contemplate Siddhanta. Try to go through these things. Nakara alas, do not be lazy, Krishna Dakaraka Swami says. I don't know why he says that. Probably we are lazy. And then he says, in the second line, he says, iha haite Krishna lages sudrida manas. By doing so, Krishna will become more fixed in your mind. So you want to have Krishna fixed in your mind. That's the essence of all instructions. Smarta vyasatatam Vishnur. Always remember Vishnu, never forget him. Manmana bhava madbhakto, Krishna say, the highest instruction in the Gita. Always think of me. So, and this is central to Raga Nuga Bhakti, Smaranam also. Remembrance, thinking, mental absorption. So we want to obtain that absorption. How we begin? Siddhanta valiya chittana akara alas. Try to think, try to occupy your subtle body in thinking about these perfect truths, this Siddhanta. And then gradually, by doing so, by engaging your intellect, your head, to soften your heart, Krishna will become more and more established there. So again, this is very crucial to create a foundation for our Raga Nuga Bhakti project. It's not that we are just getting too intellectual. Hopefully not. You let me know if you feel I'm going off the tangent and chastise me as quick as possible. But we are trying to lay some proper foundation for that. So anyhow, we will go to today's verse after a considerable introduction. So today again, we will analyze Lila avatars. No? A brief connection before going to the verse, between last verse and today's verse. In the previous verse, Brahma said what? Ignorant people do not understand that Krishna is the supreme cause of everything. He's behind creation, behind maintenance, behind dissolution. So the supreme cause of everything. So an obvious question may come after knowing that. Okay, Krishna is the source and the actual main character behind all these functions performed by Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. So how he can be known? He's beyond sense perception. Sorry. He's called Adokshaya. He lies beyond the reach of mind and senses. So how can such a person, the source of everything, be known to us? we would like to know about him. Because that's a natural, not obvious question. So in this verse, today's verse, Brahma will explain the principle of the Leela Avatar, which means Bhagavan is coming to the world over and over again, and by coming on Earth, to this planet specifically, he makes himself known to us. We can know about him because he comes to us in so many ways and so on, with different purposes. So, that's it. Let's go to today's verse, which has a very interesting meter. The first and fourth lines have one particular meter called Bamsashtabilam, and the second and third lines had another meter called Indabhadra. As you can always even see, like one is more longer than other. So the recitation may not be as fluid as you may experience with the same chanda or the same meter in the whole verse. But anyhow, we will say sometimes Brahma is too ecstatic here at this point, so sometimes he will just change meters in between the lines. He won't be able to follow one due to his emotional content. So that ends up being an ornament. So I'll recite the whole verse first, and then we can do line by line, and you can repeat with me.
Sureshuri Sri Sri Shata Taivan Sri Nishu Api Tiryakshu Yadasu Api Te Janasya Janmasatam Durmada Nigrahaya Prabhu Vidata Sadanugrahaya Cha.
I'm not sharing that with the ones online. Give me 1 second. Let's be generous with them as well. Okay. So there it is. So let's go line by line.
Sure suri shri shui sha ta tai ban ri shu api. Tiryakshu yadasu api te janasya. Janma satam durmada nigrahaya.
Janma satam durmada nigrahaya.
Prabho vidatha sadanugrahaya cha.
Prabho vidatha sadanugrahaya cha.
So the translation says, O controller of our destiny, Brahma is speaking, though you are unborn, you take birth amongst the gods and sages, as well as humans, animals, and even among aquatics, in order to chastise the falsely proud and to show mercy to your saintly devotees. So, that's today's verse. Interesting one. And again, depicting the main structure of the Leela Avatar, which is coming to the world in different forms with classical purpose of establishing Dharma, chastising the unpious, you say, and protecting the devotees. So first, I'll briefly define each one of the Sanskrit words, word by word, and then we will go to some explanation. So the first word is Sureshu. So Sureshu refers to the devas, the suras. You have to know the word asura, which means sometimes we say demon. I don't know what idea you have with that when you say that, but that's translated as such, asura. And the opposite of asura is sura. So in this case, refers to the devas. So Sureshu, sura means deva, and Sureshu means among the devas, referring to how Krishna descends among the different, as we will see, societies of people. Rishishu then comes. Rishishu means among the great rishis, or among sages, great sages. Isha is a way of addressing Bhagavan, which means Lord, basically. So Brahma's, we will see, as usual, the different names that Brahma is picking, choosing in each verse for addressing Krishna has some particular purpose. It's not just, okay, let's say a name that will fit with a meter or something. There's some particular meaning there. Tata means as well. Eva means indeed. Nrishu comes there. So Nrishu means among humans. Nri refers to the human society. Api means ant. Then comes Tiryakshu. Tiryakshu means among animals. So all those different layer with platforms in which Krishna is appearing. We will give examples of which are those forms. You can already think about some of them. And Jadahasu, which means among aquatics. Api means also. Then comes the idea of Te Ajanasya Janma. Second, third line. Te Ajanasya Janma means you, although unborn, take birth. Ajanasya means without janma or without birth, and janma means you take birth. Asatam, now comes the purposes of those descents in different forms. Asatam means what? Asat, sat. So sat means real, asat means false, or sat means the ones who live for truth, and asat means those who do not. So asatam means the, sometimes translated the unrighteous people, impious. Durmada, what do you do with them? Durmada means false pride, as we spoke the other day, false pride. And nigrahaya means with the purpose of subduing. So you come to subdue the false pride of the unrighteous. So that's my great fortune. Someone is coming to subdue my false pride. There's hope. There comes a series of names that Brahma refers to, through which Brahma refers to Krishna. First one is Prabhu, last line. So Prabhu means what?
Lord.
Yeah, Lord or Master. So that's the name of God, actually. So do not downplay the meaning of that. No? Sometimes devotees come to me and say, Prabhu, sorry, Maharaj, sorry for the offense. I like say, do you know what's the meaning of Prabhu? That's the name of God. So if you are calling me Prabhu, maybe you are asking offense because you treated me as God, and yeah, you were totally mistaken. But do not think that Prabhu is a name like, oh no, that's for the non-Maharajas, the low. Actually, Prabhu is above Maharaj. Maharaj means great king. Prabhu means God, basically. So, Prabhu. Bidata, that's another way that Brahma is addressing Krishna, which means many things, again, but the general meaning is creator. So interestingly, Brahma is known as the creator, but he's acknowledging, no, you are the creator. Sat anugrahaya, so we said asat before, now sat comes, sat refers to the sadhus, it's another way, satam, like the Bhavatan say, dharma prayita kaita botra paramonir masaranam satam. The sadhus, those who live for sad, for the real. Anugrahaya. Anugraha means another word for mercy. Kripa, karuna, anukampa, all these are referring to the same idea, mercy. So for sad anugrahaya means for the purpose of showing mercy to your devotees. So that's another purpose for which he descends. Not only to deal with the pride of the unrighteous, but especially so with the purpose of showing mercy to the devotees. And cha means and. So and, you also come for that. Okay, let's go to the different commentaries on this verse, beginning with my Guru Maharaj's elaboration on this section called Bhavanubad, Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubad. So I will repeat the last paragraph he shared in connection to yesterday's verse because it's kind of connected with today's, and then one more paragraph sentence in connection to today's verse. So referring to the previous verse, my Guru Maharaj say, then in four verses, beginning with the previous one from 19 to 22, Brahma states that Gopal Krishna, standing before him in Gopavesh, dressed as a cowherd boy, is the root of both the guna and the lila avatars. He is the source of the creation, its maintenance and its destruction. Janmadiyasya jataha. That's still last verse. And now, and at the same time, he appears within the manifest world in countless forms, avatars. which are asankhya, according to the Bhagavatam, uncountable. As an act of grace, sat anugrahaya. Anugrahaya means grace, mercy. And now comes another sentence directly connected to today's verse. My Guru Maharaj says, he has no birth, I mean Krishna has no birth, but appears to take birth, and in so doing, he ends the birth and death of his devotees. He makes a play of words with the idea of birth. He has no birth, but he takes birth, so you can stop having birth. Basically. Because of him, the idea is, because of him, there is no death for his devotees. And because of him, dharma is protected, and the unrighteous are righted. Nothing is impossible for him. So that's the end of my Guru Maharaj's commentary on this verse. So that again, in this verse, Brahma is also shedding some light about the purpose of Bhagavan coming to this world in the context of mercy. Remember, no, he's beyond karma. Krishna is not dealing with the justice department. Remember, that has to do with Paramatma. No? But in his future as Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, he's mostly dealing with the mercy department, if you will. So whatever he's doing when he comes is an act of mercy. Even the chastisement of the unrighteous, that's a very unique thing, because especially in relation to Krishna. Here Brahma is referring to other avatars, but ultimately pointing to Krishna. So he will say, some forms of God may kill demons, and that's one thing, but when you kill demons personally, they attain mukti, or they even attain golok, like Putana, extraordinary example. So that only happens with you, and that's an extreme example of anugraha or mercy. That's not justice. Putana didn't deserve to become Krishna's mother, but you gave her extreme mercy. So Brahma is again realizing the extent of this mercy principle in Bhagavan. So, regarding Krishna taking birth, appearing in the world, the unborn taking birth, of course we have to understand that he is, to begin with, a point that is made by our acharyas, is Bhagavan is Swarat. Swarat means independent, basically, which means he can do whatever he likes. As once one devotee said, Krishna does whatever he likes, whenever he likes, however he likes, and everyone likes him. But if you try to imitate him, try for 5 minutes to do whatever you like, however you like, whenever you like, nobody will like you. So you're a whimsical guy. Get out of here. No? I mean, be a little bit more. But Krishna does it and it works for him. So that shows he's the supreme. He can do it. He's Swarat. He's independent. But independent in the most charming way. So, the point is, he's free to engage his own energies. His activities are unpredictable. That means basically that he's independent. You cannot predict what he will do next, in the next millisecond. But you have full faith, whatever will come is perfect, it's ideal, it's totally charming. That's the, how to say, in the beginning, we may feel, oh, that's risky. No, it's risky to engage with a guy that is unpredictable. Now, in this world, if you want to establish a relationship with someone, you don't want that to be that unpredictable. If it's too predictable, you may get bored. But if it's too unpredictable, you may get like, I know what will happen the next 5 minutes. No, it's too much. Give me some predictability. And it's okay. I understand we need that balance, that base. But in regards to Krishna and Golok, there is unpredictability. That's how love moves. Ahiri bhagavati premna shabhava kuti labhavet, which means love moves like a snake. And that means in a zigzag way, which means not a straight line, which means unpredictable. So love moves like that means Krishna moves like that. He's only moving out of love. His dancing teacher, is Sri Radha's prem. So he dances and moves according to love, basically. So that means unpredictable. That's the nature of love. You cannot say what will happen next. You cannot control it. You are to be controlled by that. So in the beginning, again, if we are not to train for that, we will be afraid of that. Because it's too much out of our control. And we are addicted to have things under our control. Not to have them, but to think we have them. Or to try to have them. We never have them, but we are addicted to think. That's, again, Maya. That's illusion. You think you that's happening and this is not going on. So Srila Sri Maharaj will say, in the beginning, in considering these facts, in the beginning you will feel, oh my gosh, I have to fully surrender to a totally unpredictable personality. He said, at the beginning I will feel, this is too much. There is too much risk. Total risk, no gain. We will be more like, no, I want to say traumatized, but intimidated by the risk side of the equation that you still perceive, what you will lose, and no gain. You are not feeling it. There's any gain because your sense of loss and gain is totally distorted yet. So, so where real gain comes, you feel total risk. The more you advance, you will realize your mindset will change. I will think, the more I take risk, the more gain I obtain. Your psychology shifts in that direction. The more risk, the more gain. And when you advance even further, you will conclude, no risk at all. All gain. Dealing with total unpredictability. So we need to to accommodate this thing gradually in our journey. No, we have to feel okay with unpredictability coming from Krishna's side, coming from the Sarup Shakti. And that means basically to have full trust in Krishna. I have full confidence, firm trust that you are maintaining me, that you know how to maintain me. And whatever comes from you, as unpredictable as it may be, is the most perfect thing I need at this precise moment. And I surrender to that. That's surrender, basically. I'm not saying easy. As I always say, I'm not using the word easy. but not impossible either. So again, he's independent, unpredictable. But in a charming way, again. In this world, unpredictable means that's not nice. Because everyone is totally, how to say, basically mad under the influence of Maya Shakti. So they are unpredictable, like if you live with a serial killer or with someone bipolar or with some mental illness, they will be unpredictable. But be careful of not projecting, oh, Krishna is bipolar or something like that. No, I mean, so he's mad, but in another sense. So again, we have also always to separate the madness of this world, the madness coming out of Prem. Both of them are unpredictable. If you live with someone who is mad, it's unpredictable. So you choose, as I like to say always, free will means you choose which madness do you want in your life. Which unpredictability you want in your life. So also part of Krishna's unpredictability is that sometimes his lila on earth, actually his moving in this world, sometimes seem to conform to the laws of this world. So sometimes he acts as if he's one of us. And that takes that we misread him and say, oh, he's an ordinary person, he's normal. But sometimes, and other times, he's showing something pretty beyond every single law of this world. That what he saw Brahma. I mean, he saw the true things to Brahma. First, picnic, normal stuff. He's not defying, apparently, the laws of this world, but just apparently accommodating to that. And when Brahma misread that, thinking, oh, that's ordinary, Krishna immediately, his swaratness, his independence, Narayan's coming from his pores. He realized, oh my God, this is totally defying every single possible law. I know, and Brahma knows. Brahma knows pretty much the laws, how this world operates. So he was witnessing Krishna's independence, basically. How he can move in an unpredictable way. And in both cases, he's transcendental. He's not only transcendental when he shows this Aishwarya majesty, and in the picnic, he's not. in both cases he remains in the same position, but due to his independence he's exhibiting one thing or the other, but all of them pertain to the same category, the same department. As we will see, he will appear as an animal, still remains, no? He appears as a fish, as a boar. You may think that's pretty grotesque. So, no, he remains the same person, transcendent to everything, even though externally it seems like you are an animal. No? if in this world you tell someone you are an animal, they won't say, oh, thank you so much, no, I feel so flattered. No? But Krishna appears as an animal and he's untouched by animality, if you will. No? So okay, these are things that we need to think about, because we may have heard them from day one, but we may take for granted and do not deeply reflect. Oh yeah, Krishna appears this, that. And it seems even like Darwin's evolutionary theory or something, beginning with the fish and going to that. But we have to play out the implications of all the things. So no matter which form he takes, he's not limited by them. Again, something, the fact that Brahma has realized very, very interestingly these last minutes. Let's go to some of the ancient commentators. Sridhar Swami is not basically commenting on this verse, interestingly, but he has said something in connection to the previous one that we will share today. So let's begin with Sanatana Goswami's commentary. He has some very interesting things to say. He says, Ajanasya, at the end of the second line, here goes an A, this is just for meter purposes. So Ajanasya again, what's the meaning? Which was the meaning of that? Do you remember?
Unborn.
Krishna is unborn. So that's official meaning. Again, now Sanatana Goswami gives some other meaning. So he says, Ajanasya, which generally refers to Krishna as unborn, also refers to he because of whom there is no birth. What my Guru Maharaj commented above is mostly taken from Sanatana Goswami's commentary. He because of whom there is no birth. He has no birth. So if you connect with him who has no birth, you will have no birth. In other words, you will transcend. He because of whom there is no birth, Sanatana Goswami says, means he because of whom the devotees have no material existence. That's it, plain out. Which is characterized by birth. So that's an interesting idea. And that doesn't mean only, okay, because of Krishna, a devotee has no longer material existence. Doesn't mean at the end of this lifetime, I will stop being born and dying in this world. But even can mean, even while you are in this present life, material life can be suspended by Krishna's grace. And that's why over and over again I hopefully never tire of repeating that devotees should not think in terms of my material life and my spiritual life. The more you choose to think in those terms, you are choosing to maintain that duality in your life. But strictly speaking, there should not be any more material life for you. Because Krishna is part of your life. Krishna is in, if you become aware of all these facts, everything in your life is part of your spiritual life, of your spiritual project. So technically speaking, there shouldn't be any more conception of my material life. And this word Ajanasya is confirming that. Because of him, there is no more birth, no more material life. And to further clarify this, what does it mean, no more material life? Sanatana Goswami said, Krishna takes birth for the sake of dispelling the arrogance. Oh, we already mentioned this expression. And what is the idea? Here it refers to his descent, to his function of chastising the unrighteous, right? Which of course, no, we shouldn't say, oh, that's for the asuras or something, no? Like, hello, here I am. So, and that's how he helps us to not have any more material life. He comes for the sake of dispelling the arrogance. And Sanatana Goswami says, what's this dispelling of the arrogance? What's this arrogance? He says, to think, I know the meaning of scriptures. I have perfected yoga, my yoga practice, and things like this. You know, like what we say before, to think that we know, to think that we know enough, to think that I know Krishna. Even as a devotee, you can think that. That's my point. No? So be careful. I mean, you can be a materialistic and think I know so many things, but probably you won't say I know Krishna because you don't have a clue who Krishna is. So, but maybe as a devotee, you can like just switch that same tendency and say, oh, now I know Krishna. And all these people don't know Krishna, but I know Krishna. Krishna say, That's one of the anarthas that can come by wrongly appreciating the byproducts of bhakti. That's called bhakti-yuta anartha. Bhakti doesn't provide anarthas, but bhakti will provide some byproducts that if you misunderstand them, become anarthas. You will, by bhakti, receive knowledge, you receive realization, you may even receive position, followers, but they are not yours. They are the result of your bhakti practice, and you are to reciprocate with them in service, in the spirit of honoring bhakti. But if you are not properly situated, you will get attached to that. And before beginning bhakti, you didn't have those things, interestingly. You had other anarthas. That maybe through bhakti you got rid of those anarthas, and then you receive money, followers, position that you didn't have before. Now you have them, you get attached to them, and you have new anarthas that you didn't have before bhakti. And which may be even more subtle. And you may even justify them in the name of bhakti. So it can get even worse than before bhakti. I mean, this is not to be afraid of bhakti, just to be careful of properly, humbly honoring bhakti and not using bhakti for our whatever purposes. So, Sanatana Goswami says, so this is the type of arrogance that Krishna comes to dispel. This idea of I know. And again, Brahma, he was thinking some minutes ago, I know Krishna. So now he's feeling he came to dispel my arrogance. No? As one acharya said, one, at one point the devotee will feel, Bhagavan has come to earth only to dispel my arrogance. No, not like a thing, only for me, but in the sense that I have so much arrogance that Bhagavan had to come himself personally to treat my case directly. So mostly he's coming to show his mercy to me. So that's the subjective feeling of the devotee and of Rama here. And Sanatana Goswami then says how that arrogance is dispelled by Krishna's descent. All this automatically goes away by hearing your pastimes with bhakti. No? By his coming, by his performing lila, by you hearing those lilas, you will transcend birth and death. This is a famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter. Janma karma chame divyam evam jubeti tatvataha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mamiti sarjuna. 9th verse. Krishna is saying, janma karma chame divyam. My janma, Krishna said, my birth, and my karma, my activities are divyam, means divine. So divya karma, Krishna, his karma is divya. It's another way of saying lila, actually. No? So, and he says, evam jo veti tatvataha, and he who knows this, he who knows that my birth is divine, it's not ordinary birth by the strength of karma, it's not ordinary movements by the force of the gunas, but I'm not touched by them. Those who understand this, tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mamiti sarjuna, when upon leaving this body, they do not return, they do not take any other body. So basically this is the verse that gives this idea of those who understand my birth no longer take birth. The key to not being born again in this world is to understand the birth of Krishna, the nature of the birth of Krishna. If you understand the nature of his birth, there is no longer birth for you. That was the purpose of his birth, to make you stop having birth, something like this. By performing the lila, by hearing about the lila and the nature of the lila. Not only hearing the lila, because it says with bhakti here. Because you can hear the lila as some form of entertainment. And there's a lot of that. Even if you go to India, there are many of these Bhagavad Sapta or Rasa Lila performances, and for many, they are not performed by devotees many times. They're just spoken people who is very talented, know the Bhagavatam by heart almost, they are totally charismatic and sing so nicely. And if you are not very sincere, you will feel, oh, he's a pure devotee. Sometimes we are a little bit, how to say, neophyte. And if someone is Indian, sings nicely, knows the Bhagavatam in theory, and is charismatic, that's enough. Oh, pure devotee. Doesn't have anything to do with adhikari bhakti. Maybe after this series, the person will smoke cigarettes, take all his money, and enjoy his senses, exploiting the Bhagavad. So, which Bhagavad is that? Gurki Chodas Bhai will say, bring cow dung and clean the whole place. Before, you know that story. No? He was hearing this Bhagavad session from a famous so called great devotee for a week, and they asked, how it was the session? He said, bring cow dung immediately. We have to purify the whole area. And they say, but what do you mean? Whole Bhagavatam was spoken for a week. What rigor purification do we need in the environment that the Bhagavatam recites? About Gurkishore Bhai say, Bhagavatam? You heard Bhagavatam? I only heard rupee, rupee, rupee. The whole week. Rupee, rupee. That was the underlying narrative. Money, money, money. That was not the Bhagavatam. So the point is, we have to hear Krishna's lila. Krishna's birth will free us from our birth if we hear about those lilas, understanding how extraordinary they are, not just as a funny story of a blue boy appearing. Because that can be just entertainment. If there is no bhakti, if there is no bhakti siddhanta, you won't be able to take advantage of those narrations. So there is a way to do that. Sanatana Goswami then says, this today our last class, so I may extend myself a little bit more than usual without your permission. With sad anugrahaya cha, last expression, which means also you come to show mercy to your devotees. Brahma says, according to Sanatana Goswami, you not only come for the benefit of the adharmic, the unrighteous people, but also you come, or especially you can, to fully satisfy the sadhus. That's actually the main purpose of Krishna's descent, to give pleasure to his devotees. He says, by suppressing the bad arrogance of the wicked, the eternal religious principles are set in motion. The religious principles are established on earth by also dealing with the wicked. This and the manifestation of the sweetness, pastimes, and so on of those avatars are a way of showing grace to the devotees, or to the righteous. Sat may be righteous, but refers to the devotees. So Krishna takes birth for that purpose as well. Not only to deal with the adharmic, not only to establish dharma in the world, but especially to give pleasure to his devotees. Especially as Krishna, basically. That he has no other business, as we say the other day, than to give pleasure to his devotees. He has no other occupation than to fulfill the desires of his devotees. That's Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita. You have no other business apart from satisfying the wishes of your devotees. He says that literally. That's who Krishna is. He who has no other business than to satisfy the wishes of his devotees. He's all day long doing that. He's not dealing with universe and cosmos and administration of the planets. For that, he has different departments and expansions. He's too busy dealing with his devotees in Lila. That takes his whole time, his own energy, his own heart. And then Sanatana Goswami explains the different names, or some of them given by Brahma to Krishna here. One may ask, why do you show mercy to the materialists? Sometimes we may ask those things also. Although the very question may be contradictory, you know, because if you say, why do you show mercy to Yashoda? One may say, she doesn't deserve that. I mean, I'm not saying that, but one may say, but the point is, of course, what does it mean to deserve mercy? You deserve justice, but mercy is never deserved. If you say you deserve mercy, it's no longer mercy. Or we could say you deserve mercy means You don't deserve mercy. And that's how you deserve mercy. You follow my point? You deserve chastisement, but you receive mercy. That means the only way you can deserve mercy is not deserving it. So, but someone may ask, why do you show mercy to the materialists? Like implying they do not deserve it. To explain this, Sanatana Goswami says, Brahma addresses Krishna as Prabhu. He uses the word Prabhu, which again means different things. One of them, Master, Lord, how to say in English? Almighty. Yes. Almighty. Which implies, hints as you are supremely independent. That's how Sanatana Goswami translates Prabhu here. You are supremely independent, so you can do whatever you like. Oh, he doesn't deserve that, Krishna said. So, I give it. Costless mercy. I can do it. But that's not justice. You are right, Krishna will say. I'm transgressing justice. This one law I created on the world, karma and so on, but I can go beyond those laws as I created, and I'm giving mercy, which is a transgression of justice. And someone may ask then, Sanatana Goswami, but how the bad tendencies of the unrighteous can be destroyed? So to explain this, Brahma addresses Krishna as also Prabhu, but now Sanatana Goswami gives to Prabhu another meaning, which is O capable one, or Samartha. Samartha means capable. So you can do that. Again, you can do that because, I mean, the words Prabhu imply these two things. You can do that because whenever you want, as you wish, it works, and you have the power that whatever you try, it's working. Nothing is impossible for you. Basically, that's the implication. And to further establish this, Krishna, Brahma addresses Krishna as Vidhata at the last line. Sometimes it's translated as creator. Vidhata means like the one who establishes Vidhi. Vidhi means rules. So the one who makes the rules is the creator. Sometimes Brahma is known as Vidhi also.
Isn't it also like the types of things like four types of people know me? I just wonder.
Yeah, that will be in another in another direction. Yeah, Vidhi can refer to types of. Yeah. Chatur Vidha Bhajante Mam or Chatur Vidha Sri Bhagavat Prasad. Four types of, yeah. In this particular case, Vidha has to do with, it has the long A with the Vidhi, which means, again, rules, Vidhi, Vidhi Bhakti, with rules, regulations. So he who makes the rules is the ruler, the creator. So, but in this case, Sanatana Goswami said Vidha or Vidhata means that Krishna is the creator of all other forms of God, the manifestator of all avatars, the avatari. Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, avatari. So in other words, you can do whatever you like, however you like, you are the source of everything, supremely independent. And Sanatana Goswami concludes saying, the gist of this verse is, the essence, although you are in the material world, the people know you are real and are one, though many. He goes back to the idea of the previous verses, is be the abed. Many things, many avatars coming from you, many forms, animals, but you are one. There's no duality in you. All these come from you. Diversity, but connected with the unity of your existence. Let's go to Jiva Goswami. Be patient. We have eternity. Remember, Parikshit Maharaj was hearing for a week without water, without prasad. So here, an hour and a half. And prasad is waiting after that. This prasad also, don't forget. This is the main part. Maybe, hopefully after that you will say to Ram Mohan, we are so full of Harikatha prasad that we cannot take more anymore. So Jiva Goswami is saying, Ajanasya, on the word Ajanasya again, in the second line, the end of the second line, which means without birth. He said, the Lord is called Ajanasya because he does not take birth like material beings, but appears out of his own accord. And he clarifies, by his Swarup Shakti. In other words, our birth is through the agency of Maya Shakti. You are ascribed a particular body according to your previous karmic reaction. Here you are. That's your birth. So Maya Shakti is facilitating that birth. In Krishna's case, Swarup Shakti is facilitating his birth. So it's a whole different set of reasons and laws behind that. No, he's not forced to appear by karma. He's forced to appear by his own mercy, by his own independence, by his own affection, and so on. And that's why sometimes it is called Abhirbhav, or Ujjiva Goswami say Pradurbhav, which means kind of self-manifestation, not birth. Because the idea of birth generally implies you are forced. You didn't want to be born with this particular face, but you have it, sorry. Or whatever. I would like to have been born in this country, in this, I mean, you have what you deserve. No? But Krishna is self-manifesting. No? He's just appearing as he is. You follow? Our face is not as we are, basically. Our face is not us. But Krishna's face, Krishna's body, Krishna's appearance is who he is. No? So that's called Abhirbhav. That's why you use this expression sometimes with great personalities, Abhirbhav or descent of Krishna, Mahatirubhav. Self-manifestation. And then Jiva Goswami, in this connection, connects the word Bidata again. He says, Jiva Goswami says, in this connection, Krishna addresses this verse as Bidata, which means that he makes the rules, the Bidhi, but he's not subject to them. So create some rules, and you are born in this world according to certain laws, but Krishna appears into this world and says, I'm appearing out of my own sweet will, not following the rules that make everyone come to this world. That's an important point. He creates the rules, but he can break them. He knows when to break them, how to break. He has his own rules. He's independent. As my Guru Maharaj likes to say, in rules, in love there are no rules, and in rules there is no love. And in one sense, love makes its own rules. Now we have some rules in our life because we don't have love. But the more we have to follow the rules in such a way that we know when to break them. Dalai Lama said that one was interesting. Follow the rules very nicely so you know when to break them. And to break them means not to be immoral and transgress anything, but just to accept a higher rule, a higher law. And ultimately that higher rule and law is love, which makes its own rules in an unpredictable way at every single moment on the spot. And of course, Jiva Goswami will also clarify, your appearance is for the sake also of protecting your devotees. So all this verse can be quite connected with Bhagavad Gita also, 4:8. We quoted Bhagavad Gita 4:9 some minutes ago, about the results of understanding Krishna's birth. Bhagavad Gita 4:8, Krishna is saying, Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samsthapanartya sambhavami yuge yuge. He says, age after age, I manifest myself, sambhavami, with three purposes. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samsthapanartya. To protect my devotees, to chastise the impious, and to establish the principles of Dharma. So basically this verse is mentioning that. And in connection to protect the devotees, remember what we said the other day. We could say, okay, I come to protect my sadhus, paritranaya sadhunam. And one can say, but if you are a sadhu, why do you need to be protected by Krishna? If you are a sadhu, means that you already are protected by Krishna. And you know it. Rakshishatiti Vishvaso. You have full confidence, Krishna is my protector. So what is the need of Krishna coming, saying, I come to protect you? A sadhu has full confidence, Krishna is protecting me, and Krishna will protect me. So of course, a deeper understanding of that is, Krishna is coming to protect those sadhus who are dying in separation of him. So they need to be protected from themselves. Because they can no longer survive without having the direct darshan of Krishna. So especially he comes for those sadhus, to save them from the fire, forest fire of viraha, separation. That's, if you want to, how to say it, to summarize or to ultimately explain why Krishna comes, there are so many levels of reason. Ultimately he comes for those sadhus who are dying separation. That's the main reason. On more superficial layers, he comes in general to protect other devotees or to chastise the impious, to establish, all those are like more secondary functions of the Yuga avatar. But Krishna himself, Swayam Bhagavan, he comes only to experience Leela with his bhaktas. So, anyhow, it's one of these points deserves a separate lecture. I'm struggling to, okay, stop Maharaj and continue with the next part. This will never end, and you have to do some other things today. That's, yeah. Anyhow, so Jiva Goswami continues saying, asatam, the word asatam, which means suppress the wicked arrogance of bad people. I mean, asatam refers to the impious, and Krishna comes to suppress the wicked arrogance, or another way of saying false pride. Brahma here is saying that actually the hint, at least that Jiva Goswami is catching, is Krishna is not too concerned with Maya's business. Now, like, again, like as a secondary thing, he comes to do that. Like he does that with the air of indifference. Not because he's not merciful, he's not directly connected with Maya's affairs. He's too busy in Leela. He's too engaged with the Swarup Shakti, with his devotees. Yes, some things are going on in the realm of Maya. In an indirect way, automatically I'm dealing with that. But personally, I'm exclusively focusing on other things. And Prabhu, says Jiva Goswami here, means Achintya Shakti Yukta, which means, oh, he who is endowed with Achintya Shakti, inconceivable potency, through which everything can happen, even the impossible. One name sometimes that is given to Krishna is Sarveshwareshwara, which means the supreme controllers of all controllers. And that he ultimately speaks how he, through his yoga maya, can make the impossible possible. And Jiva Goswami concludes his commentary saying, in this and the previous verse, which again are the two of them connected, Brahma implies, your manifestations as Guna avatar, previous verse, and Leela avatars, this verse, are related to an independent Maya with its special functions. So here again, Brahma is hinting Yoga Maya. The way you appear in this world, again, it's not through Mahamaya, through Maya Shaktis, but other department altogether. This means that the Lord reveals his forms of Sudha Sattva, or spiritual substance, different from matter, by his independent Maya, which means his own Maya, his own energy, his Swarup Shakti, or Yoga Maya is another way of putting that. As he is independent, Yoga Maya is independent. So in this way, he can defy the laws of this world. He maintains the law in this world for everyone, but he himself defies them while appearing there in different forms. Again, he appears as a boar, as a fish, as a turtle, and you say, oh, a turtle is pretty limited, but here you have an unlimited turtle. So which examples are there of the different species mentioned here? Not like devas, rishis, humans, animals, aquatics. Jiva Goswami gives some examples, so we will share them. Baladev Vidyabhushan also gives different examples, so we will share them. So among the gods, among the devas, Krishna appears as Vaman Dev, which has some connection with Indra and so on. Or also, Baladev Vidyabhushan says that Jiva Goswami quotes Yajna, which is another form of Krishna appearing among the Dev society of Suras, devas. Among the rishis, Baladev says, you appear as Parashuram. And Jiva Goswami says, you appear as Naranarayan. Naranarayan rishi. So you appear in that particular species, if you will, society. Among men, Baladev Vidyabhushan said, you appear as Sri Ramachandra. Now Ramachandra appears in, it's not a lila, human-like lila. And Jiva Goswami says, you appear as Prithu Maharaj, which is a Shakti Abhish avatar, actually, empowered personality. Then among animals, both Baladev Vidyabhushan and Jiva Goswami quote Varahadev. Because Nrisimha Dev is half-half. No? Varahadev is full bore, no? From tip to toe. No? And then among aquatics, you can imagine which ones. Baladev Vidyabhushan quotes Matsya, and Jiva Goswami quotes Kurma. Because turtle is also aquatic. No? Can be outside, but can be inside. No? So in this way, Krishna is appearing among all these different forms, societies. Again, but remaining untouched by Maya Shakti, remaining unlimited, and all these forms being connected, tied, and inseparable from this original form that Brahma is seeing here. So let's almost finish by quoting Bishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's commentary, which is short, and it's kind of a summary of what we have been seeing till today. And then just a few words to connect to next verse, and we conclude here. So Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says, paraphrasing Brahma, he said, Brahma continued in this verse, therefore, all your avatars are mostly for the sake of informing about your path, establishing dharma bhakti in the world, so that those ignorant ones do not overpower your devotees. So you are mainly concerned with your devotees. By establishing dharma, incidentally also you deal with the adharmic, but all with your devotees in mind as a first consideration. You appear in different avatar forms, divine descents, for the purpose of suppressing the bad arrogance or the false pride of those who think only we have knowledge. Again, that's the type of false pride. All the charas refer to the same point. False pride means, I think I know. And also to show mercy to your faithful devotees by means of facilitating a continuous contemplation on your own forms, qualities, and pastimes, all of which are Satchidananda. So in other words, by you coming to the world, showing your form, performing lila, that allows people like us to meditate on those things. You came, those who were there were able to see that personally, and those who came after are able to hear about that, to contemplate those lilas, to think about that. So by your descent, you are not only benefiting those who were there with you, but everyone else who continues benefiting from hearing about that and meditating about that. No? Your Nam, Guna, Rupa, Lila, all of which are Satchidananda or transcendental. And Bishwanath concludes quoting one verse from Bhagavatam 10.2.35. That was said in this verse of the Bhagavatam, which says, these are the prayers of the Vedas personified. O you, Vedas direct addressing Krishna, O you who assume various forms, if this body of yours were not transcendental, then spiritual realizations which dispel ignorance will be non-existent. That's a very interesting verse. I'm tempted to do another class immediately at this moment for 3 more hours, but I'm concerned about our Bulgarian translator here about to collapse, so I won't do that. I'll contain myself and I'll choose that Dayal Nitai survives and remains with us. You see, not too differently exhausted than the translator, so I will. But there's one point just in this connection that the Vedas are saying, which is, if your body were not transcendental, there would be no spiritual realizations. Another way is, we have spiritual realizations by hearing about how your body is transcendental, by knowing how you are transcendental, your lilas, your form. If that wouldn't be transcendental, we wouldn't have a foundation on which we can have spiritual realizations. You know? The spiritual realizations we want to attain as devotees are based on Krishna's qualities, on Krishna's pastimes, on Krishna's saying. That's the basis of our practice. To hear about those lilas, to chant his name, to remember his pastimes. But because all of that is transcendental, if that's mundane, that cannot give rise to spiritual realizations. Spiritual realizations will come in contact with spiritual realities, topics that we will hear and speaking about. So that's an interesting way of confirming your name, your lila, and so on are divine, because the result of hearing, speaking about them, remembering them, is divine. It's creating epiphany, spiritual insights. So let's conclude connecting this verse with what will come next. So I tempt you to continue studying this series online, because I will continue somewhere else. Or you can join me. We're tomorrow morning. See you in the airport towards Finland if you want. And for this, let's go for a minute to Jiva Goswami's Bhagavat Sandarbha, Anucheda 38. And he will present some interesting words from Krishna. And in this case, till now Krishna was speaking mostly in Braja Bhav, no? Like Mukdata, totally in his mood of asking Brahma, what are you saying? Why do you think, say this to me? I'm just looking for my friend. But here, according to Jiva Goswami, Krishna is speaking a little bit more in Aishvaric terms to Brahma for a moment. So he says, my dear Brahma, what conclusions have you reached? Do you think that because this one form of mine is all-pervading, it is impossible for my other forms to be seen anywhere? Like implying, okay, you are praising my form as all-pervading, my original form in front of you. But actually all the other forms that come from my form are also all-pervading. So Krishna is adding another layer to Brahma's vimohan. No? Because Brahma is already bewildered, like, I'm realizing that your form is all-pervading and this other lila avatar, guna avatar come from you. And he's saying, yes, and now we are speaking about lila avatars, which are directly forms of Krishna, not like Brahma, Shiva. So Krishna is saying, but all those forms, lila avatars that come from me, that are me, are also all-pervading. So he's making Brahma's, he has four heads only, but he will have five, the fifth will be spinning at this time. So Krishna continues. Should I stop for a minute? No problem. We have a break?
No, we can
come. Yeah? Okay, it's a little bit just. So Krishna continues. Again, all my forms are all pervading. In this world, you can see that ordinary material objects, like clay pots, come into being, no? At one point. Do you think that this same process of coming into being applies to my forms? Like, do you think that those forms appear in this world, but before that were non-existent? Which, do you think that this same process of coming into being applies to my forms and such, and forms as such, sorry, which are of a completely different and spiritual nature? You have just been astonished by seeing all my opulences, Krishna is saying to Brahma. No? He saw unlimited Narayans, but only by the ones you saw, Krishna is telling to Brahma. Like, your four heads are spinning, but what I just showed you some minutes ago, but that's not the whole thing, actually. Brahma is telling, Krishna is telling. Have you come to the conclusion that there are no others, no other forms, no other, and that my opulence is therefore limited? No? Like basically, remember, Brahma was thinking, okay, I know Krishna in the beginning. No? And now he's having this old situation that's realizing, oh my God, I didn't know Krishna. Now I'm starting to know Krishna, and I'm realizing your form is all-pervading, and all these other forms come. And Krishna is saying all this to caution Brahma, be careful that you now you are thinking, now I know Krishna. That's not happening. Be careful. Do not think, now I understand all these forms come to you. Yeah, but all these forms are also all-pervading. Be careful on not limiting those forms which come from me, which who I'm all-pervading. So be careful of thinking that my Aishwarya is limited. He's only speaking about Aishwarya, but to speak of Madhurya. Moreover, Jiva Goswami concludes, paraphrasing Krishna, moreover, do you think that because my expansions in the forms of the boys and calves, remember, were later transformed into 400 Vishnu forms, that therefore some of these forms are sometimes manifest and others not? So do not think in those terms. Do not think that these forms... Okay, Krishna became the cows, the calves. Krishna became the friends and then stopped becoming them. So those forms started to exist and stopped to exist at one point. You say, no, that's not happening. That you are no longer seeing now the calves and the boys as I expand doesn't mean that they are not existent. They're all pervading. So again, Brahma is like... So in relation to this, this sets the stage for the next verse, because in our next class, Brahma will kind of reply to all these points. Like, we'll understand the points Krishna is making and we'll further confirm and reflect on how all of Krishna's leelas are taking place continuously in different parts, simultaneously, through different expressions and different forms that are all pervading at the same time. And all of them come originally from this one single medium-sized undivisible form that Brahma is seeing in front of his face now. And all this by the arrangement of Achintya Shakti, the conceivable potency of Bhagavan. So that will be continue in our next lecture, which will be in Finland next week, but we will be streaming them online. So for those who would like to continue, see you in Finland, see you Zoom, see you soon. And before finishing, I don't know if anyone has any questions that you may like to share in connection to today's topic.
I have a question.
Yes?
I wonder if the main thing which comes from studying in depth this Brahmashtuti is that we need really to establish God as God, the supreme controller, that everything comes from all this tattva, and then this going into Leela, no, how Brahma. So this, like, is it so that we really need to learn very good tattva and Shastra and then...
Yeah.
To see the connection then to Leela, Brahma is...
Yeah, of course, it's difficult to say this is the main thing of the Brahma Stuti, the Brahma Mohan Leela, in the sense that there are so many main things.
Yeah.
Now, when we are going through these verses, you see so many important foundational points are made in this Brahma Vimohan Leela and Brahma Stuti. And that's why it's such an important section of the whole Bhagavatam. And for us, as Gaudiyas, it's so important section. And that's why we decided, okay, let's make a series of lectures about that. Although I knew when I was thinking that, to say, oh, this will take lots of time. Because I'm giving one class for each verse, minimum 40 classes, and there are always some classes before, after, so it will be 50 classes. It may take months and years and time, but it's worthy doing because it's important. So let's make this point, how important it is. This is. Let's take the necessary time to go through all this section. So among all these most many important points that this section is giving, I will say that, yeah, arguably this is the one you mentioned is one of the most important, if not the most important. Of course, depending to the stage of each practitioner, some aspect will be more important than others, but in generally this is a very crucial principle that we share today. That first, you have very clearly how Krishna is the source of everything, about the Aishwarya, the divinity of Him, through knowledge, through Siddhanta, through Tattva, Sambandha Gyan. Have that in place. And on that basis, you will be able to conduct yourself in bhajan, in practice, abhideya, in a way that will invoke the corresponding goal that we are looking for as Gaudiya. So, and yeah, Brahma is perfect example of that. He's and the sequence of the prayers his will also show that. So now we are in the middle half, exactly half of the prayer. So this first section and a few more verses will mostly lay this foundation. Krishna is the source of Narayan, Krishna is the source of all avatars. And in the beginning he made it clear bhakti is different from karma and jnana and all this type of basic siddhantic stuff. But in the last part of his prayers, in the last, let's say, 10-15 prayers, Brahma will shift more towards appreciating the fortune of the Brajavasis, and I pray to be born here in whatever form, and it starts like to shift towards bhava and lila, if you will. No? From tattva, siddhanta, he gradually, his own heart is being carried in, more in the, into the appreciation of what's taking place in the Braj, and his prospect to enter there for eternity. But again, first comes all these other things. No? So we see this type of sequence, I mean, in the whole Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is not speaking Krishna Braja Lila in Canto 1, he's speaking Canto 10. So first, Bhagavatam is giving a whole series of, it's preparing ourselves, preparing the stage for the drama of Krishna Lila to be enacted, or basically. Bhagavad Gita similarly starts in a certain way and gradually builds up. So yeah, this is a very important lesson that we need to go through if we want to enter the emotional loving reality of Lila, of Braja Lila. First we need to have in place proper Siddhanta, proper Tattva, who Krishna is, what's the nature of his form, his pastimes, because yeah, Braja Lila, if you are not prepared for Braja Lila, you will probably misunderstand Braja Lila and think this is ordinary. And there are many examples of people who just went to the Bhagavatam, to Krishna Lila, without having any education, and they think this is almost pornographic. There are these type of things. And people even making legal cases against devotees. Now you are worshipping a playboy god. This is totally immoral. Taking everything out of context, not with bad intention, just because they went directly to Krishna Lila and he was like, what's this? I mean, this is weird. Because they didn't study Brahma Vimohan Lila first. Interestingly, this comes before other Lilas also, which are even more difficult to understand, like Krishna's relationship with the gopis. That will be the most complicated thing to accommodate. So Brahma Vimohan Lila comes before Rasa Panchadhyaya. You know, these five chapters where Krishna is performing Rasa Lila with many ladies who have had husbands and all the things like this. They say, like, what's going on here? So Brahma is preparing the ground so we can also understand all these other sections. I mean, but he himself was bewildered by the picnic only. What to speak, glimpsing at the Rasa Lila, you can be even more bewildered. So my point is, even if you look at, I don't know, Brahma, the picnic, or even if you look at Yashoda tying Krishna to a mortar, I mean, that's pretty bewildered. No. Even if you don't want to think about Krishna as God, that a mother is tying his son to a post, that's strange. Now, that will hit all the news in the newspaper here. No, mother tied son to a post. You have to understand even that. Why she's doing that. What's the background of that? Her bhava, her batsalya. What's happened before. Because if you take all these things out of context, that's why we say a text out of context becomes a pretext. So we have to be very careful about pujala raga pata gaurava vange. We approach the Raga Marg, the path of spontaneous devotion of Braj, with the utmost respect and veneration. It's not that the path is about respect and veneration, but we express respect and veneration for the path. We are careful in addressing that with the proper understanding. Because if not, we may end up just being imitationists or misreading it, and in the name of that becoming, I don't know, Prakriti Sahajas or who knows what. We have seen so many of these different results of approaching Braja Lila without proper Sambandha. You have a whole different set of Appasampradayas and stuff like that. So, because we want Rasa Lila so much, we want so badly to go there, we are not rushing there in one way, and we are taking the time to properly understand what's that about from proper sources. You follow? It's not that I want so badly to go there that I'm just running there without consideration. No, no. Because I want so badly to actually enter there, I'm taking the necessary time, even if that may take lifetimes, to properly understand what's that about in theory, in conceptually. So when I conceive that, when I direct my thoughts, my meditation there, I'm really connecting the reality of the Braja Lila, not my own speculation, my own thoughts. So, yeah. Okay. So I think we can stop here today. So thank you so much to all of you for also your presence during these last 10 days in Sofia, Bulgaria. It has been my pleasure as usual to be here. I mean, hopefully to see you later in today's evening program, but if not, hope to see you soon somehow or other. Srila Gurudev ki jaya, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jaya, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jaya, Giriraj Maharaj ki jaya, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadri ki jaya, Sri Dwadasi ki jaya, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jaya, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jaya, Gaur Premanand Hari.